broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web. You're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSRHealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Relationships, love, and sex, the spices of life, driving us all and commanding the wheel, is the media darling in the complex world of human behavior. Expert therapist, author, and radio host, Dr. Jane Greer. Sit back, buckle up, and enjoy this fast-moving ride with fascinating guests. HealthyLife.net welcomes you to the Doctor On Call Hour with Dr. Jane Greer.
Hi, everybody. Helping yourself to know how is why you're here with Dr. Greer, and you're listening to the Doctor on Call Hour at HealthyLife.net. Today we're featuring Shrink Wrap on Call, where we hear from the people behind the creative curtain, their newest endeavors, how their minds work, and what makes them tick. It's about what we can learn from the trials and triumphs of celebrity relationships. But that's not all. We'll also be shrink-wrapping with none other than Jay Cruz, our amazing producer and the velvet-voiced host here at HealthyLife.net, where we indulge in all the latest celebrity news, exploring the ups and downs of their relationships, and most importantly, what lessons we can take away from their stories. Today on the show, my guest is E.A. Hanks, a talented writer whose work has been featured in The Washington Post, The New York Times, Time Magazine, and The Guardian. She previously held editorial roles at Vanity Fair and was an associate news editor at The Huffington Post. She currently lives in Los Angeles with her partner. And we're going to be talking about her exquisitely written, deeply felt memoir, The Ten, which recounts the solo cross-country journey she made across the American Southwest. It was a mission to uncover not only what harrowing violence may or may not have happened to her late mother, but also to look within and discover who she herself is, where her mother ends and she begins. And I am absolutely, utterly delighted to welcome you, Elizabeth, here to today's show and to be doing the show with you.
Thank you, Dr. Jane. It's a delight to see you, hear you in this context. It's a joy.
Absolutely. You know, this has been, as my great aunt Rose once upon a time said, it may be a long time in coming, but the time comes. And this is the time that has come for you to come into your own ownership and your own with your remarkable journey. You know, it was forged, and you and I know, by complete courage to confront your past and to chart your future, relieved from the childhood fears that you grew up with and experienced. Mm. And, right, while recreating some of the old ones, you tackled them and you ushered in freedom in the here and now. And the 10 is your ten-timony. It's your testimony, ten-timony, right, to how you did that. So let's jump into how did you do that? Let's get started right away with how did you do that? And let's go with the fact that your book is not just a road trip memoir. It's really a journey through family history, grief, and self-reflection. So what was the emotional catalyst that made you say, I need to write this story?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it might be helpful for listeners to understand that Dr. Jane and I have been working together for over a decade, maybe over two decades at this point. I mean, I don't want to out either of us.
Who can count, right?
But it's been a minute, right?
And, at least.
You know, the sort of, to ask about the catalyst for the 10 is sort of, you know, akin to asking for the catalyst for entering into the therapeutic space, right? Because I couldn't have even had the wherewithal to conceive of such a project of a book like The Ten, which, by the way, took me 10 years to write. Without sort of the foundational work of the therapeutic process. And so I entered into therapy with you, Dr. Jane, basically because I was in that stage of my late 20s when all the coping mechanisms that I had picked up to survive my childhood and my adolescence and my early adulthood without, you know, the basic skills of life that had just not been handed down to me through, you know, the circumstances of trauma and violence and deprivation, I entered into the therapeutic space because I realized, like, oh, I've been coasting and I'm losing that momentum, right? There's no, I'm reaching the end of this window of time where the coping mechanisms I've picked up are still working. Like, I'm getting less and less return on my investment for the cheats, the cheat codes that I put into my life. And I realized that I just did not have, on no level did I have, was I living the life I wanted to live. I didn't have the intimacy in my friendships and my relationships that I wanted. I wasn't connected to my work. I wasn't writing at the time. And I was just sort of feeling like I was beginning to coast, and that is not what I wanted for myself. So whereas some people might enter into therapy kind of because they're in a free fall and the bottom is coming up fast, I feel like I kind of came to you in that sort of plateau of your late 20s when you are really kind of staring down the barrel of middle age arriving and you're trying to figure out, okay, I've been dealt this deck of cards, this hand of cards from my parents. And, but, you know, I'm an adult now, so how much am I responsible for? And how much can I take the wheel, for my life? And how much can I be the deciding factor as to what my relationships are like and what my career is like? Or is it just, you know, you have the life that you led when you were 6 years old, to a greater or lesser extent? So I think, you know, how did I have the emotional wherewithal to, like, start this? Well, it starts about getting curious about your own life and how can you put together all the puzzle pieces of your childhood. So once you and I had started that work and I came to be able to sift through all of those pieces, just as a writer and as a creative, I could see that even though the specifics of my life are singular, you know, not everyone has a mentally unbalanced mother, not everyone has a very famous father, I could see that the bones of the journey that I was on, which is basically asking, who are my parents and what cards was I dealt? And how do I play the hand I've been given so that I have a life on my own terms? That's a universal question, right?
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I think that once I figured that out, it became very kind of like the road rose up to meet me, right? And the opportunity to do this on a professional level presented itself. And through the work that you and I did together, I was happy to accept that offer and to go on the road.
Well, you know, it's amazing that you had, as I said, the courage of your convictions to tackle the trauma of the past. And I think many listeners out there may be shaking their heads and puzzled at the moment when they hear trauma and deprivation associated with your family name and the mm-hmm. family that you grew up in, to think, you know, Tom Hanks as such, who's your dad, that
yeah.
you would come from an early childhood where it was punctuated by trauma and by deprivation mm-hmm. and neglect is kind of riveting. So let's talk about that, because that was quite the challenge to balance mm-hmm. the public persona of your life with the private reality of what you were living with. Can you share some of what's in your book with the listeners in terms of what you were living through?
Yes, of course. I just have to say, I remember in our very first session, Dr. Jane, You said the classic line, so what brings you here today? And
right.
I remember my response was kind of like this flurry of words, right, of saying, you know, my mom never had a diagnosis, but she struggled with serious substance abuse. She struggled with serious mental illness and delusions and talking to God. We had a violent relationship that occasionally burst out into physical violence. I grew up in a house where sometimes we had 7-course meals, and then other times there was no food in the house except for a dusty can of pate. I mean, minus the raccoons, it got a little gray gardens around there. You know, two staunch characters living in a house with a bunch of cats. And on top of that, my dad is Tom Hanks. And your response to me was, and I'll never forget it, you said, oh, so I'm sure you never have any issues with wanting to be loved or anything. And I thought, you know, me and this gal are going to go far because she gets it. You know, in 3 minutes, you had it all figured out. So, yes, for listeners, my dad is the famous and sometimes beloved actor Tom Hanks. My parents met when they were college students. And they kind of bumped into each other, two sort of lost souls at the time. They had a child, my elder brother. And by the time I came around, the relationship was really running on fumes. And my mother was sort of descending into aggressive drug use and worsening mental health. And when they split, family law basically had the lay of the land was that mothers get custody. So I grew up actually really far away from what people assume was even the location of my childhood. I did not really grow up in Southern California. I grew up in Northern California with my mom. And we were surrounded by sort of a coterie of lookers on and well-wishers and people who were trying to kind of like keep an eye on our situation as my mother's mental health sort of degraded. But the facts of my early childhood are basically that my elder brother and I grew up kind of away from Southern California and the sort of like bright white light heat of my dad's fame. Now the plus side of that is that we were blessed with privacy and anonymity. I know that there are listeners going, I didn't know Tom Hanks has a daughter.
Right.
And that's all part of my long con. You know, my dastardly plan to take the world by storm and surprise. But the sort of material consequences of that meant that we kind of grew up on our own, my brother and I, with my mom. And, you know, you and I have obviously talked about this many times. She did not have a diagnosis. She never, we could never kind of get her interested or available to see a mental health practitioner, in part because she was extremely paranoid and saw mental health professionals as a threat, kind of sent by my father to pester her life and endanger her children. But she was someone who, like I said, struggled with addiction, and she struggled with delusions and paranoia. And that meant that there were really good days where, you know, she was driving me all over the state to compete in horse shows, and she was letting me dye my hair fun colors when no other kids were allowed to, and she would let me paint my room however I would like to. And then there were bad days where her anger was so terrifying you couldn't leave your room, and there were stretches where there was not enough food, and my brother and I at ages, you know, 8, 9, 10 had to get up, feed ourselves, get to school, come home, take care of ourselves, and put ourselves to bed. You know, so it was a really, it was both ends of the stick. You know, my childhood was incredible opportunity and blessing and getting to go to the Oscars, and then I would go home and realize, like, oh, right, there's no food this week. Well, hopefully there will be food next week. So it's certainly not what people expect when I describe how I grew up.
Right.
But you know, that's how you get a book deal.
You speak
the surprise,
out. You
the
speak
surprise
your
element.
Truth. Right. You know, you take them by storm and tell your, you talk your talk. But now, speaking of talking your talk, here's the question.
Yeah.
Did you talk to anybody? Did you tell anyone when you were younger? Did you tell friends? Did you tell your dad? Did you talk to anybody about what was happening and what you were living for? Because the hallmark, and there's no question that you were living with an emotionally abusive, neglectful parent, mother, and physically at times abusive.
Yeah.
And one of the hallmarks of abuse is that kids don't tell. In fact, one of the books written about one of the most horrific cases of child abuse was by Greg Olson called Tell No One. And, or if you tell. So how did you bridle yourself? Who did you talk to, if anyone? And what did you share?
Yeah. I mean, you couldn't have said, like, if I could have, as an 8-year-old, busted open a Bic pen and given myself a prison tattoo, that's what it would have said. Don't tell, right? As this huge reminder to myself, like, you know, imagine an 8-year-old with like a memento-esque reminder tattoo. Like, don't spill the beans.
Right,
I think as the younger sibling, the job that I assigned myself was to be my mother's protector, to be the bodyguard. Whereas my elder sibling, as the caretaker, was the one who was perpetually asking for help, keeping my dad updated, letting teachers know what was going on at home, and, you know, was navigating all the help that we got from outsiders, from my dad, even though he wasn't living in Sacramento. He was working with counselors and teachers and neighbors to be as present as possible. And the job that I took was to be my mother's greatest defender. And I think that comes in part because I was so young that I didn't know that in other kids' houses, they didn't keep a loaded gun on the coffee table. And
Incredible.
They didn't sleep with a shotgun on the bed next to them. You know, I thought these things were normal. I thought everybody spent their weekends going to Cocaine Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. You know, there's me at 10 years old setting up the styrofoam coffee cups for, you know, Narcotics Anonymous meetings that my mom is hosting in our living room. You know, no one's better at wiping down a whiteboard than me. Let me tell you, I've got skills.
My
job was really to defend my mother from all of these people, because I just felt that people were trying to, as a child, I thought they were snooping, right? I thought they were making fun of the fact that my mother could so rarely take care of herself as to be fully dressed in public, or that they were making fun of the fact that our clothes smelled like cigarettes and our house smelled like animal urine and feces. I was so protective of her. So it's so interesting, as you know, as I do press for the book and people keep saying, like, well, why didn't you get out and why didn't you leave? Well, because it was my job to take care of her. You know, that's the codependent bond that you form with your with a parent who can't take care of themselves, let alone take care of you.
Right. Well, you became what we clinically call the parentified child, where you became the parent. And also part of that dynamic is by taking care of your mother, you're taking care of yourself, because you keep the threat of her turning savage at bay. And you keep the threat of anybody finding out and discovering and her turning on you for that in check. So
there's also that level of, like, the strangeness of the good days versus bad days, right? Because I had friends from outside of school who thought my mom was the coolest, right? Who else's mom just hands you a roll of cookie dough and goes, there's dinner, kids, stay up until however late watching, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street. And then at the same time, I had friends from school who were very clearly not allowed to come to Susan Dillingham's house, even though, you know, Elizabeth is a nice girl. So it was like living in a hall of mirrors or a kaleidoscope. I couldn't tell if I had the best mom in the world or if I had the scariest mom in the world. And that really plays on the guilt that you feel as a child. And I think really feeds into the drive to defend and protect.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because she could be the best, she could be the worst, and it was so confounding. You never knew who was going to show up. And that showing up, we're going to show up for a commercial break. So everybody stay with us, because we are talking about childhood trauma, its impact, and balancing that with fortune and fame. And you don't want to miss it. Stick around. We'll be back in just a minute here at HealthyLife.net.
How could you do this to me? What about me? If your selfishness is ruining your relationship, or if you are trying to learn to trust after betrayal, then How Could You Do This to Me and What About Me are the titles of two separate books by Dr. Jane Greer that you should get to help improve your relationships. Imagine having a happy, loving, thriving relationship again. Get the help you need with How Could You Do This to Me or What About Me by Dr. Jane Greer at Amazon.com. Get your copy now at Amazon.com.
Audiobooks gives you instant access to over 50,000 of the bestsellers and hottest book titles in romance, mystery, fiction, and many other genres. Just visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Audiobooks to get started.
Dr. Jane Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person. Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com. Hollywood. You don't have to be there to discover the inside scoop on the relationships and inside workings of the stars in showbiz or other famous people in the news. Imagine getting up close and personal as Dr. Jane Greer delves into how these celebrities are navigating their relationships with insider tips and insights that actually can help you handle your relationships better. Just go to drjanegreer.com and click on Latest News, and you'll get, well, the latest news at drjanegreer.com. The positive side of podcasts. Always have been, always will be. Uncensored, entertaining, timeless talk. HRNpodcast.com. Take a break from the dark side.
Welcome back to the Doctor on Call, Shrink Wrap on Call Hour. I'm Dr. Jane Greer, and I'm continuing my conversation with E.A. Hanks, the author of The Ten. And we were talking before, a couple of things I want to get to before we run out of time. We were talking about that you couldn't talk, you were protecting your mother. How does it feel now to be talking? I mean, the goal was to get out as a kid, to let it out, and you couldn't. Now you are literally getting your book out, and you are talking out about what you went through. How does it feel?
I mean, it feels like sometimes I'm filled with such deep gratitude that I think the top of my skull is going to fly off, and that I can, you know, soar over the tallest buildings. And then sometimes it's so bizarre, it feels like a dream. Like the joy that it takes, that like suffuses my body. I can't really describe it, but you know, to work on something for 10 years, and it just, I mean, Dr. Jane can attest that I have had so many moments of thinking, you know, I don't think this is ever going to get there.
Right.
There's so many obstacles, emotional obstacles, logistical obstacles. It doesn't help when your publisher's, you know, printing house is in China, in the middle of a global pandemic. You know, all, like so many X factors went into this. But I think, you know, one of the facets that brought me to the therapeutic process and working with you, Dr. Jane, was that I wasn't writing when we started working.
Right.
I had been given this incredible opportunity at a very young age, and I had no skills to be able to take advantage of that opportunity. And losing it felt like it was just shame that could have drowned me for my entire life. Mm-hmm. And dismantling that through the work and letting another opportunity come to me and then taking advantage of it and really not giving up on it, to have a finished book in my lap now just feels like kind of like the greatest receipt of the work and of the process and of what good can come to you when you get curious about your own life.
Phenomenal. And the being able to be your own person and truly navigate your own ship in the course of this. So in the book, there are a couple of things that just to give readers a little snippet of deliciousness. You know, we talked about how you were balancing being from a famous family and living in and dealing with trauma and deprivation. Mm-hmm. You gave a metaphor of being like a green pocketbook purse that fits in everywhere but nowhere.
Yeah.
Is that how you felt a lot? And when did you, is that how you felt a lot? And when did you start to feel that you, wherever you are, you belong and you fit in?
Yeah, I think that I remember, In our work together, we use a lot of metaphor, we use a lot of analogy, because it's such a helpful tool to kind of describe processes that are happening, you know, on an un- and subconscious level. So metaphor can be really helpful. And I remember once, you know, you and I were talking and I said, you know, it's like my entire life I've been trying to decide if I'm a black purse, as you say, pocketbook. Am I a black purse or am I a brown purse? Because if you make a decision, you're going to clash with your belts, you're going to clash with your shoes. You know, the only way you can make it work is if you wear navy blue every day. And who on earth wants to wear navy blue every day? You're going to look like you're in a cult. So the exit strategy I had when I went on vacation somewhat recently was like, I'm going to treat myself to a green bag, and in matching nothing, I will match everything. And the central sort of premise at the core of the book is that I grow up, you know, my famous family in Southern California, my crazy family in Northern California, and I can't really tell what world I live in. Because when I'm home in Sacramento, everyone says, like, well, you don't belong here. You're a famous person's kid. You go to the Oscars. Why are you walking around and with your hair unbrushed and clothes that have never been washed, reeking of cigarettes? And then when I was in Southern California, it would be, well, you don't belong here. You don't go to school here. Your bedroom looks like a hotel room because there's no personal effects anywhere. You really belong in Northern California. And so I kind of felt like, am I a shark? Am I a jet? Am I a cat or am I a dog? And like, what planet am I from? And I ended up sort of, you know, part of the therapeutic process ended up feeling like, you know what? I'm picking the green bag. I'm not from Northern California or Southern California. I'm from both. It's not an either or situation. And that sort of self-determining, that self-determination of saying, no matter where I am, I'm going to find people that make me feel like I belong. And that at-homedness in yourself means that, you know, you're never a stranger because you have the self-respect and the self-awareness to be present wherever you are. And I think the book, because I'm literally traveling over 10,000 miles, I'm putting my body in strange places, I'm talking to strangers, it meant that I was able to, you know, reach out to, you know, Cajun gator wranglers and Navajo coal miners and El Paso poet cowboys and say, like, will you tell me a little bit about who you are and where you're from? And because I feel secure in myself, they feel safe to be vulnerable and share with me. So it, you know, it's a skill that I picked up to be at home in my own life, but it empowered me as a journalist and as a writer to be able to level with people on a vulnerable and intimate, you know, level. And it's become kind of like my X power in a weird way. I have the X power of the green pocketbook.
Well, because you integrated who you were as a kid growing up into who you are as an adult, and you're not, as you say, either or. You are all of. And so that became your core self that you take with you and hold on to, no matter where you are or who you're with. So, you know, are you a cat or a dog? I think we still have time for the story of the dog that you found, because so much of your childhood was plagued by guilt and trying to protect your mother, trying to save your mother. Then you had a very, very dear friend who you write about in the book, Scott, who unfortunately passed away and you were not able to save from his demons, his personal demons. Mm-hmm. And then you were on this road trip and found this dog. Tell the listeners.
Oh, boy.
About
the dog. Oh, boy, the dog. You know, Jane makes a cameo in the 10, listeners. If you would like to see her off the clock and off your radio waves, but on the written page or in the audiobook, if you care to listen to my dulcet tone some more. The sort of emotional fulcrum of the book where I confront the depth of my guilt and the depth of my shame about not being able to save my mother. You know, I started out on the trip kind of thinking that I'm in the car with one ghost. You know, it's me and my mom. And I'm so good at grieving her at this point. You know, it's been 20 years. I always think that's important to remind listeners. I did not set out to do this, you know, 6 months, 2 years after her passing. It was a full 20 years. But what I had not really counted on is I had just lost my dear friend to suicide. And I had not really counted on the fact that I was still in active grief and that that was coming with me on the road. And I had not been dealing with it and shoving it aside and really focusing on how good I am at grieving my mom and patently ignoring how dismissive I was about my grief for my friend. And of course, the universe and its wisdom and in its own aptitude for metaphor. I'm at some point, I arrive in El Paso. I have a fever of like 102, which keeps me from doing my interviews and doing the work of the book because I'm just unconscious in bed for a couple of days.
Oh my goodness.
When I finally, you know, am headed out onto the road again, I stumble onto this dog, this abandoned dog who is looking at me like, help me. And through connecting with you and connecting with my lessons that I've learned, I realize it is not my job to save this dog, even though I love dogs. And it became the whole kind of crux of the book, which is, what am I responsible for? And the answer is myself.
Yourself, and who are you responsible for? Yes, absolutely. And you and I, before we run out of time, both know, and anybody who knows me knows, I am an avid dog lover.
Yes.
So being able to help you to reach the decision that taking the dog on and carrying that dog with you was not viable, and that it was about you and yourself, was what you needed to do. It was being able to help you, not the dog. Well, listen, you have really written a remarkable book, and anybody who wants to see, hear more details, see the places that Elizabeth explored, they jump out at you. It's a book of history that is just steeped with remarkable writing. It moves you. You'll be moved in a way that you would not expect, and it's a must read. It's life-changing. So you can all purchase it on Amazon.com, and it is definitely worth the purchase. Elizabeth, it has been so wonderful to have you here on the show today. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Dr. Jane.
More than a pleasure. And everybody stay with us, because when we come back, we're going to be shrink wrapping with Jay Cruz right here at HealthyLife.net. Back in a minute.
Dr. Jane Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person, Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com. Hollywood. You don't have to be there to discover the inside scoop on the relationships and inside workings of the stars in showbiz or other famous people in the news. Imagine getting up close and personal as Dr. Jane Greer delves into how these celebrities are navigating their relationships with insider tips and insights that actually can help you handle your relationships better. Just go to drjanegreer.com and click on Latest News, and you'll get, well, the latest news at drjanegreer.com.
If you want USA and worldwide car rentals, choose rentacar.com. Free cancellations on most bookings, no hidden charges. They are trusted by over 4 million customers. Visit our advertiser page and click on the Rent-A-Car banner.
If there was a hotline to heaven, who would you call? In Dr. Jane Greer's book, The Afterlife Connection, you can learn to connect with a loved one who has passed, so you can say hello instead of goodbye. You'll get 7 tips for opening the channels of communication with your departed loved ones and recognize the signs your loved one sends your way. Learn how to include your departed loved one in your daily life, and you can even heal damaged relationships even after your loved one is gone. A special book by a therapist who cares, The Afterlife Connection by Dr. Jane Greer, gives you the tools for filling the gaps and creating a sense of closure. Get this amazing book today at Amazon.com or visit drjanegreer.com, www.drjanegreer.com. Remember, media with integrity, www.healthylife.net.
Welcome back to the Doctor on Call, Shrink Wrap on Call Hour. I'm Dr. Jane Greer, and now it is time for Shrink Wrap with Jay Cruz. Jay has extensive experience as a broadcasting professional. He's used his background and experience to help produce, coach, and further the positive vision of Healthy Life Radio and its numerous shows. And the celebrity stars shine so brightly, and we all look up to them, yet we're puzzled when they fall, so Shrink Wrap is here to shed light on all. Talking about what we learn from the trials and triumphs of not only celebrities, but all relationships. So, you know, Jay, I was just talking with E.A. Hanks about the trauma that her childhood had on her. And now, most recently, Maria Shriver came out with her book talking about the emotional damage and the trauma that she felt after the affair that her husband, Arnold Schwarzenegger, had with the nanny and the fact that he had fathered a child as well. And, you know, it struck me. Imagine the betrayal, the public humiliation, the silence that she sat with for so long. The bottom line is, trauma of any kind, childhood trauma, current trauma, especially when you're in the spotlight, can leave lasting scars. And, like we were talking about with E.A. Hanks, when you don't talk about it, it festers. So speaking out, owning your own story as she did, that's what we're going to talk about in terms of Maria Shriver, that trauma really does reverberate, I think Maria was talking about 15 years or so, that it takes a long time to heal, and sometimes the healing continues to be the current process of your life. So what do you think about it?
It is, well, thanks for having me on. First of all, Dr. Jane, great to be here. And this has been a while since, you know, the news happened, the bombshell struck, and I don't know, we're probably just getting used to our favorite new gossip columns on the internet about the time the story broke. You know, I've seen pictures of the child who is now, you know, the late teenagers growing up and, you know, living life. And there were times I thought, you know, okay, so we're moving on here, but how about Maria? You know, she's carried on seemingly in a strong position as she is, and from her family backgrounds, obviously dealing with a lot of trauma in her family, you know, with the her uncles and everything. And, you know, it's just something you just don't shake it off and move on. I looked at some of the articles, and it was interesting how she, you know, finally came to be. I was, being here at HealthyLife.net, we do talk about and seek out and put the highlights sometimes on alternative health, not necessarily always people's first choice. It was interesting to see that she had tried some alternative health or avenues like visiting a shaman, you know, which is something a lot of people might not think of firsthand. But ironically, in all that seeking, she finally found it talking to a nun. That was wonderful.
It's incredible, isn't it? You know, it speaks to, she wrote some poems in her book, and I wrote down one line because I found it so striking, but apparently I can't seem to find it at the moment. But what I remember, in fact, bits and pieces of it, was how she spoke about being in pieces and, you know, really feeling that she was in fragments, and just how devastated she was and how broken she was and all that it took for her to heal from the aftermath of that. And, you know, I think a lot of times, having dealt with infidelity over the years extensively, many times people think that once the apology is ushered and, you know, okay, I'm sorry, it was a mistake, I'll never do it again, and the promises are made, that the fallout of betrayal and broken trust is over. And in reality, that's just, that first apology is just the beginning. It's step number one to the healing process. What has to follow that is the rebuilding of trust, which is something that takes time and needs to run the course of time and doesn't go away in 5 months, 6 months. And I remember, Jay, one time I was doing one of the TV shows on infidelity, and the husband said to me, "Dr. Greer, how long do I have to keep apologizing?" And I looked at him and I said, "Until her pain is gone." He said, "I've been apologizing 2 years." I said, "Well, if she's still in pain, then she needs you to understand the damage done and relate to that pain and reassure her that it is not anything you will ever cause or do again." And, you know, so the expectation that you pick yourself up and just go on is just, it's just not true. It's whether it's the trauma of childhood that lingers and reverberates and comes up in current relationships as an adult, whether it's the adult relationships that play out and fall out and leave you falling down and brokenhearted and broken in spirit as a result, knowing that it is a time process, that you don't just get over it. I remember also I was working with an identical twin whose twin had been killed in a plane crash. And as it happened, she was a therapist. And here she was working in a mental health center. And her supervisor, she came to me one day, 6 months later, and she said, "Am I supposed to be over the death of my identical twin?" I said, "No, of course not. Who told you that?" And she said to me, "Well, my supervisor said it's been 6 months already. When are you going to get over it?
Oh, my God. One of the worst things you can say to a person dealing with that ever.
Ever. I mean, let alone losing a loved one or a sibling, but a twin sibling?
Yeah,
and
I said
to her,
it's a little different, you know?
It speaks to the difficulty that people have in dealing with those who are going through or who have gone through trauma. They want it to be over and done with. They want you to just move on and get on with your life and carry on leaving it behind. Just forget about it, put it away, put it on the shelf. And I've always said that when it comes to trauma, you don't get over it, you get on with it. You move through it, you keep going, but not that it is over. You know, and you know, when I was a kid, Jade, there was a poem about friendship that the Girl Scouts told, and it went like this. Friendship is like a china cup, fragile, precious, and rare. And when it's broken, it can be mended, but the crack is always there. And that's trauma. You know, it's like open heart surgery, any kind of medical procedure, we carry scars, and they are testimony to the pain and the ultimate gain that we live through to surmount and overcome.
Yes.
So, I mean, I think Maria Shriver, just like we were talking about with E.A. Hanks, the fact that she's spoke her truth, is speaking her truth, that Maria is finally coming out and talking about, you know, what that was like is really terrific, you know.
Oh, it is. We do have to go to break in just a moment, but I wanted to comment really quick on that poem. It reminded me, and I know there's a name for it. Obviously, it's in another language because this is a Japanese tradition. But in Japan, when a teacup breaks, they mend it together, but they use like this certain glue, or they add, you know, like gold sparkles to the glue. So when it glues together, there's like a gold lining where the cracks are. And in a way,
wow,
it sort of reminds you of what was and what has now happened. And it sort of can remind you that, okay, I grew from that experience, or I've been through that experience. And this represents the mending of the experience. And I know there's a name for it. Anyway, we have to go to a break. Maybe some listener can look that up and give us a call. But we have more to shrink wrap.
That would be awesome. Jay, that's incredible, because it really talks about turning the silver lining into gold.
Yeah, it totally puts it right there for you.
Yeah, it's incredible. Well, on that note, stay with us. I'm Dr. Jane Greer. When we come back, we're going to do some more shrink wrap with Jay Cruz. Back in a minute at HealthyLife.net.
Dr. Jane Greer is recognized as a leading national expert in sex, love, and relationships. She's the type of person that you want to know. Filled with wisdom, kindness, and empathy, she spends her life helping people. Whether through TV appearances, on a radio show, through her books or magazine features and columns, or in person, Dr. Jane Greer's main goal is to help you. Find out more about Dr. Jane Greer by visiting her website at drjanegreer.com. That's drjanegreer.com.
If you're looking for unique items at affordable prices, then you should try Dream Product. From apparel to beauty, from shoes to therapeutic relief products, visit HealthyLife.net's advertiser page and click on Dream Products, and maybe your dreams might just come into reality.
If there was a hotline to heaven, who would you call? In Dr. Jane Greer's book, The Afterlife Connection, you can learn to connect with a loved one who has passed, so you can say hello instead of goodbye. You'll get 7 tips for opening the channels of communication with your departed loved ones and recognize the signs your loved one sends your way. Learn how to include your departed loved one in your daily life, and you can even heal damaged relationships even after your loved one is gone. A special book by a therapist who cares, The Afterlife Connection by Dr. Jane Greer gives you the tools for filling the gaps and creating a sense of closure. Get this amazing book today at Amazon.com or visit drjanegreer.com. www.drjanegreer.com. How could you do this to me? What about me? If your selfishness is ruining your relationship, or if you're trying to learn to trust after betrayal, then how could you do this to me and what about me are the titles of two separate books by Dr. Jane Greer that you should get to help improve your relationships. Imagine having a happy, loving, thriving relationship again. Get the help you need with How Could You Do This to Me or What About Me by Dr. Jane Greer at Amazon.com. Get your copy now at Amazon.com.
More exhilarating talk. HealthyLife.net.
Welcome back to the Doctor on Call, Shrink Wrap on Call, Shrink Wrapping segment of the show. I'm Dr. Jane Greer, Shrink Wrapping with Jay Cruz. You know, Jay, in addition to E.A. Hanks and Maria Shriver, also Kelsey Grammer has his book coming out called Karen, A Brother Remembers, recounting his trauma of his sister's murder. And in addition to which, this week on Lisa Rinna's podcast, Let's Not Talk About the Husband, the Real Housewives star, she opened up about some of her incredibly intense family history. So here's how it went. She shared that her father, Frank Rinna, chose assisted suicide back in 2016 at the age of 94 under Argonne's Death with Dignity Act. He'd been in pain and struggling with recurring pneumonia, and she called the experience surreal, but did support his decision. And then, as if that wasn't heavy enough, she also revealed that her mother, Lois, get this, Jay, survived an attack by a serial killer in 1960. The Trailside Killer, David Carpenter, attacked her. She lived, but she
crazy.
Suffered lifelong injuries. I mean, is that incredible?
Yeah, I remember, I've heard of that person in history, infamous person, you know. Like you said, a serial killer that, you know, didn't stop at 1 or 10, you know. To be able to survive, I know, I have a personal friend who I was chatting with who recently told me they were randomly attacked by some person jogging in her neighborhood. She has since moved from Los Angeles because of that.
Yeah, I think the reality is that we see people with famous names and big lives, and we assume that, which is why I started with you, the shrink wrap, you know, the celebrity star shines so brightly, that we admire and aspire and are inspired by them because they are so talented and, you know, accomplish so much and bring us so much joy and enjoyment. But we don't think, you know, mother was attacked by a serial killer, grew up with a mother who was paranoid and delusional and starved you at a time, you know, a sister was murdered by a serial killer. We just don't make these associations. Husband not only slept with another woman, it was the nanny in your house and had a child with her. I mean, these are enormous traumas. And, you know, they happen to everybody. It cuts through race, religion, class, doesn't matter. And, you know, which is one of the things about child abuse. It doesn't matter, rich, poor, famous, not famous, that's what we're hearing. Abuse is abuse. Trauma is trauma. And, you know, I think it shows when we see these celebrities who, like Elizabeth was saying, who do the heavy lifting, who persevere in their goals, in their vision, in their dreams for themselves, that they overcome the hardship. And as you so eloquently shared with us, the, you know, that crack becomes a line of gold. And it's that golden stroke that lets them know they have healed to bring in the golden light into their lives.
Yeah, it's It is a powerful metaphor, and that's why I love reading and watching biographies, because no matter who you are, if you're famous enough or well-known enough to have a book written about you or a documentary made about you, you've accomplished something, and that means, you know, you've done some good stuff. But, you know, we don't know this until we, you know, look at that and you go, oh, I remember when so-and-so, you know, won that award, or that TV show was everywhere, and that person was the in person or the it girl or the, you know, sexiest man alive or whatever it is. And then you look behind the scenes and, you know, they're like, yeah, when I went to get that award, I was dealing with this, or, you know, I had to overcome this. And the reason I was so good at that role is because I could reflect on it because of this experience. And, you know, I think a lot of the times with the celebrities, you know, the public is certainly quick when they put out an opinion that we don't agree with when it comes to politics. Yet, when we're going through our day, at the end of the day, or when we're looking for freedom of reality and we want to escape and maybe watch a movie and be entertained or be informed, we tap into these people. And there's thousands of them, and it doesn't matter which one. We all get some kind of value out of it, the entertainment value. And then when something happens to it, we're like, oh, I kind of bought into that person, and now I feel connected in a way to them. And that's, it's so interesting just to see the stories of what these people overcome. And you're like, how did they do that? I would have crashed in my bedroom for 16 months before I even opened the door had I gone through that. And here they are acting their butts off, you know?
Exactly. And I think, you know, to EA's credit, she wrote the book to speak out, to share, and to encourage and let people know that you're not trapped in your past. You're not stuck in, you know, Groundhog Day, reliving the pain of your past and reliving deprivation and emptiness and neglect over and over and over repeatedly, that you have choice. As children, we don't have choices. As adults, we do have choices, and we can choose to heal. And I think all these celebrities, Kelsey Grammer and his book about his sister, and Lisa Rinna talking about it. And by the way, when you have these powerful, powerfully painful experiences, they are also kind of embarrassing, or they can be embarrassing. They can fill you with great shame. And so disclosing them, talking about a parent's suicide or a sibling's addiction, drug addiction, gambling addiction, the people that I work with talk to me about how shameful that family member or that experience has been. And so this healing that comes with talking and, as EA said on the show, getting it out, letting it out, is so powerful. And so any of you listening to today's show, to the takeaway from the gaggle of celebrities that we're talking about is speak up, speak out, speak your truth, let it out. Do not hide and run for cover. Seek above ground and let people know what you're dealing with and talk about it, because it is life-changing, and it's a game-changer. I mean, I don't want to do a plug for therapy, but for the record, it's a good thing.
I will do a plug for therapy, because if you keep it bottled up inside, I mean, I tend to be a private person, and then at some point I go, I need to talk to somebody about this. And at some point, your best friend goes, dude, that's a little too much for me. You need to call a professional. You know, because you can't burden your best friend or your family member with problems. And, you know, it could be your family that's, just, you know, trauma or something. Like, I don't want to talk about what dad did when I was 12, you know. But anyway, talking about it, at least you get it out of your system. You get it out of off your chest. You know, I need to get something off my chest, or I need to clear my mind. And that's what you're doing, literally. You're getting this off your chest, because if you realize that you're breathing heavy, and then that heavy breath can actually cause bad health issues down the road. And just being able to heal and move on. And that's where we're going to wrap up Shrink Wrap. It was a joy speaking about these sometimes tough topics with you today, Dr. Jane. I enjoyed it a lot.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Jay, as always, for being such a great shrink wrapper with me. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Join me next month for another episode of the Doctor on Call Hour. We're going to be featuring shrink wrap with author Nikki Mark. She had her modern love story in the New York Times a few months back. It grabbed my attention. She's the author of Tommy's Field, kind of a continuation, Love, Loss, and the Goal of a Lifetime, talking about the loss of her son and the powerful afterlife connection she's had with him. So you don't want to miss it. It's going to be a wonderful show. Be sure to visit me online at www.drjanegreer.com for relationship tips and advice. Check out my latest book, Am I Lying to Myself? How to Overcome Denial and See the Truth. It's available on Amazon. Any listeners who are in New York, get today's New York Post, the article on emotional infidelity I've been able to give a quote to. That's interesting to hear. And remember, you can always get what you want when you're in the know.
Thank you for joining Dr. Jane Greer for Doctor on Call. Listen to this episode again anytime on demand at healthylife.net. Keep up with Dr. Jane Greer's social media, blogs, magazine articles, books, and guest appearances at her website, drjanegreer.com. Dr. On Call with Dr. Jane Greer is produced and syndicated by healthylife.net. All positive. Web Talk Radio.